You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
I feel more confident in Adelin now than I did at the end of day 9. He made the resolution that he has to see his dad, therefore he has plot armor now.
I agree with you, Trevor. I feel that Adelin is safer than Zeth in this moment.
I would agree.
And yeah, I feel like the candlestick thing was like the, yeah, he's going to be fine.
Welcome back to Following Noadoms, to my podcast. This week is episode 267, and we are in Wind and Truth, 129 through 131. The absolute precipice, surely, of the contest of champions. Paul, how are you?
Swell. We now know who ODM's champion is, who Honor's champion is, of course, and who Cultivation's champion is, because I've given myself the title on our podcast here, our little name titles, said I'm Cultivation's champion. So there it is. News for all of you, I'm sure. I will be taking part in the contest as well as Cultivation's champion. It was a little subscript in the contract you probably looked over.
If we flip to chapter 132 next week and Cultivation shows up with a champion, the laugh is going to be on you. Elliot, how are you?
I am pretty floored at this point. This is it. Gotta be, right? It doesn't get any bigger than the contest of champions, the big reveal, the scene from the art of Dalinar going up the stairs, arriving on the scene, and Odium unveiling his champion. Epic.
There have been many, many predictions on this podcast, but Paul might take the cake this week.
Oh my goodness.
And Paul might take the crown, which is incredible to say, but we'll get there. Elliot, do you have something for 129 through 131?
Yes, let's hit a summary. Lots of big stuff, but I think I can summarize this probably pretty quickly. So chapter 129, Zeth and Kaladin arrive at the final monastery and are facing down Ishar and his team of human-fused honor bearers as well. So they enter into the fray there against the enemy. Adelin and Yonagon have arrived at the throne room, and it's a trap. Adelin gets trapped inside the throne room, which is completely lined with aluminum, and he's facing none other than, we've said this guy's name a couple different times, Abaddai or
Abaddai. Yep.
Abaddai.
Abaddai.
Okay. Abaddai the monarch, or whatever his name is. And he's in a heap of trouble. Renarin, Relaine, and Shallan, we finally come back to them. Been in several chapters since we've seen them. They arrive at Mishram's prison. And it's in no other than the childhood bedroom of Milishi, who is the one who scampered off with Mishram captured in the first place. So that was our...
Who had Mummy Milishi on their bingo cards?
Yeah. And then still in chapter 129, Dalinar and Navani kind of share a tender final moment before Dalinar goes up to the challenge. Chapter 130 jumps back over to Zeth and Kaladin as they're fighting Ishar and all of the honor bearers. Kaladin's trying to convince Ishar to release Shinovar. I'm gonna talk you guys through what I think is happening in that scene later, because it's going to take me too much time now, but we'll get into it. Dalinar is entering into the contest. He feels confident. He thinks he's going to lose, but he's still confident that he's doing the right thing. He has walked the journey. He's ready for the destination. He takes the step out onto the field of battle, and his opponent is Elokar. Oh, wait. In chapter 131, it's not Elokar. It's just grown-up Gavinor. Grown-up Gavinor. Okay, we're gonna get into it in a minute. We're not going to get into it now. Grown-up Gavinor is the champion of Odium. That happens in 131. Also in 131, Shallan enters into full-on showdown with Marais. And there's a couple other people there present in the scene, which again is going to require a little bit of breakdown analysis from us when we get to chapter 131. That's kind of it. So we leave everybody right in the middle of pretty massive showdowns with their opponents, pretty much in every single one of our plot lines at the end of chapter 131.
Paul, do you have two words?
I do have two words. Y'all are going to get mad at my second word, but my first word is conundrum, which y'all can't get mad at that one. It's a normal word, conundrum. And the conundrum actually most specifically refers to Zeth, as he mentions that he needs to say his ideal to get through to Ishar, but cannot say his ideal until after he's defeated Ishar and fulfilled his quest. And that's quite the conundrum, the logical conundrum. We're going to see how that plays out later on. Anyways, that's that. But also, everyone is quite in a conundrum right now. We have the Contest of Champions, which is crazy to say we're there. We have Adolin in an aluminum-filled room and all sorts of things. My second word is takesies, backsies. And that is because...
We need to get a grip of two-word inflation on this podcast. We need to bring it back down to two words.
I'm going to defend him here. We've hyphenated a lot of things that should never be hyphenated. I think of all the combos, this might have a decently strong case for a hyphenation.
Because you can't have like just takesies or just backsies. It's takesies, backsies. You know? So... that's in reference to Elokar being the champion for Odium. And then the second one in the next chapter, it's like, oh, nope, actually just kidding. It's Gavinor, you know, so a quick takesies backsies on that. Obviously, it wasn't ever like Odium was trying to say it's Elokar. It's just that's how it looked to Dalinar, which makes sense. But yeah, we get grown up Gavinor. We are going to see Gavinor and Dalinar potentially play swords. So I don't think they say that, reference that specifically here. I mean, it's implied they're against each other, obviously. But they haven't made the specific, like, ooh, grandpa, let's play swords joke, you know?
Speaking of cheesy lines, it'll be Gavinor's last line before the contest officially begins. Hey, Grandpa, let's play swords. And it'll be terrible.
Wow, I think you're right. That's not as bad as... Now, that's a finale, but I do hear it. And I can get more behind the we're going to play swords joke, I guess.
Elliot, do you have two words? Two words?
I do. There are two words. They are undisputably only two words, but I don't even need to share them anymore because the two of y'all just completely stole my thunder with that. My two words are Blaze Swords.
I'm sorry. First time we've really spoiled two words, I think.
Bummer.
You have got stolen my two words.
Too ahead of ourselves.
You did. You're cheating. You're looking at my notes. Get on my notes.
All right. Mm-hmm. Well, okay. To give the listeners some insight, you guys used to coordinate your two words and make sure you didn't trot on each other's two words. You have not done so in many books, and it still has yet to happen. Like, you used to intentionally not pick the same word. That doesn't happen anymore. You guys just go for it, and we still haven't overlapped yet.
That's true.
You guys have four more episodes.
When we did that, that was like just the Way of Kings or something, wasn't it? No, or maybe just some episodes in the Way of Kings.
I think you coordinated all the way through Words of Radiance, and then you stopped.
I don't know about that.
I'll go look back and look at the outlines. I won't. Okay. We have epigraphs to cover before we actually get into the meat and potatoes of the contest. Epigraphs for 129 through 131. Usually we don't cover this till the end of the day. However, I feel like we're going to make a special case here because we get quite the reveal and we got some better stuff to talk about by the end of the day. I'm going to throw that out there that I think we might be a little distracted from epigraphs by the end of the day. We will still make time for it, but we're going to take time now. The wind was not there for the contest of champions, the final confrontation between Odium and the mortals who would oppose him. She felt ostracized from the world where it was storms and not wind who drew attention. I know to this day, people are confused by how at the end, Spren began arriving in the east without the need for bonds. Notum, now among the most famous of Honor Spren, is an example. The answer is simple, however. As the lands began to think of them and remember them, they needed less the bond of a single person to give them purchase in the physical realm, for the thoughts of an entire people bolstered them. I record here the notes of the song. The wind knows it very well. I cannot hear her voice, but sometimes I hear the flute. Curiously, the closest I came to the Knight of Wind and the Knight of Truth during their quest happened during the last hours before Stormfall, when they visited my parents' house while I was asleep and purchased their wagon. I often reflect upon how the world changed that day and how I spent it, completely unaware, working in the family orchard, picking fruit, while the end of all things itself came upon us. Several things there. What you guys get?
First thing is I've still been trying to pin down who's going to be our author for Wind and Truth. Because this is all excerpt from Wind and Truth, right?
Correct. Wind and Truth. This goes all the way to like page like 94. It gets quite into the book.
Yeah. So we've thrown out a lot of names. I still have lots of ideas that seem feasible. But the one that seems most directly trying to poke at who's the author going to be, is the last part. It says, I often reflect about how the world changed that day and how I spent it completely unaware working in the family orchard. Now, picking fruit while the end of all things itself came upon us. Now, it could be that is, you know, this is a quote from the book. That's not the context. It's not actually the author and it's a autobiography or something. But it seems, in this instance, it's definitely implying that this would be the author talking, you know, thinking back to the Contest of Champions, how everything changed and how they spent it completely unaware, picking fruit while the end of all things itself came upon us.
The real ID is the one previous to that. Mm-hmm. The closest I came to the Knight of Wind and the Knight of Truth during their quest happened to be during the last hours before Stormfall, when they visited my parents' house while I was asleep and purchased their wagon. Kaladin and Zeth just purchased a wagon like two chapters ago. So it's that random couple's daughter or son?
Oh, wow. Okay, I didn't even realize that, which is quite embarrassing now. Okay, and right before you said that, what I was going to say is that this would imply, I don't think we know anyone who has an orchard and that's there picking fruit from it. So I was going to say that this may be our protagonist or a protagonist for the back half who has written this book.
Still quite feasible.
Yeah, who has written this book after learning of this sometime in the future, like similar to how Dalinar and our characters have learned about their past with honor and all these things. They've seen these visions. This person may be writing this years in the future, and it's after getting involved and seeing the past through some means and things like that. So I think this is just new character. This isn't like, is it Shallan or Kaladin or Dalinar? Or who is this?
Right.
I think this is a child from Shinovar, number one.
Yeah.
But that in itself, I feel like, is a pretty big reveal if that's true, because we debated for a while who was going to be the author of When in Truth, and maybe we even tossed out, oh, it's going to be random so-and-so we've never met before. But I don't think we really maybe meant that as a possible candidate, and that's what it is.
So is this the Stormlight equivalent? So is Wind and Knights of Wind and Truth? Which also, okay, I'm realizing that that does classify the Knight of Wind and Knight of Truth to be Kaladin and Zeth, respectively, right?
Correct.
It says the closest I came to the Knight of Wind and the Knight of Truth.
Let me back up.
Okay.
I already made that assumption. Mm-hmm. Therefore, the wagon purchased is the wagon from two chapters ago. I am using A to prove B, not B to prove A.
That's a fair point. Yeah, that is fair. But the reason we're making that jump is because they purchased a wagon, and that was shown to us just before this.
Correct.
If other characters had just purchased a wagon, we'd be like, hold on. How are they the Knight of Wind and the Knight of Truth? That makes sense, because in my head, the Knight of Wind being Kaladin makes sense. He's had this whole arc talking to the wind. I wasn't sure who the Knight of Truth was supposed to be. I've been under the impression this whole time it was going to be tied to Shallan, because she's been our truths and truth character. I've been thinking more lately, I wonder if it's going to be somehow tied to Dalinar. It does make sense for Zeth because of the whole truthless, not truthless arc. So that makes sense. But either way, we are getting a new person here. And they are apparently the author of Knights of Wind and Truth. And so I'm under the impression that this is written later on, and so it feels like we have a spoilers for Mistborn, minor Mistborn era 1 and 2 spoilers. We have a Hero of Ages situation that we know who the Hero of Ages is, and we're reading in Mistborn era 2 that people refer back to this Hero of Ages and things like that. So I anticipate that Kaladin and Zeth are going down in history as the Knight of Wind and the Knight of Truth. And here we have the future stories writing about them.
So at the end of the book, it'll be, I am, unfortunately, the author of Wind and Truth.
Yeah, there we go.
These epigraphs are very different, even from, I think, the previous Wind and Truth ones we got, maybe, in that a lot of the epigraphs nowadays in these books I kind of dismiss pretty quick. I see them, okay, good info, flavor text, something I can dive into later, but I'm not gonna pay attention to this now. These epigraphs, there's a lot to unpack here, actually. I think we've actually only scratched the surface, because there's this reveal of who the author could be, but there's a lot of mentions in here to the end. And like implied in these discussions is that very big things have happened.
Right.
It talks about Stormfall.
Yep.
Capitalized.
Who's got the third storm on their bingo board?
Not me.
It's quite quite the point in your favor there, Paul. Stormfall? That sounds pretty promising.
You're right. And I've, at the start of this book, they hint at it multiple times. A new storm is coming, and they keep saying stuff like that. And have we seen it? No, we haven't. And it's day 10, and I feel like it's too late for that. But I would love to see a third storm come in the 10th day. That'd be awesome.
Not only do we have Stormfall, we have the end of all things capitalized.
In caps, yeah.
oh boy.
Isn't that a chapter in The Lord of the Rings?
Oh, it might be.
I believe that's the chapter in The Lord of the Rings, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay, I want to extrapolate a bit further, but I don't want to cut you off, Elliot. Did you have more you were
mad? There is more, but it's going to require digging into one of these epigraphs more deeply. So share your thoughts, and then I'll take us back to one of the early ones.
Okay, I wanted to look at the longer epigraph we have here about Notam.
Yeah.
Okay, so I didn't think too much about this at first. I was like, oh, look at Notam. He's notable and a famous honor spren. That's awesome. And now, as we've talked about this more and more and more, I think we're getting a picture of what we've been guessing at or theorizing for quite some time now. And that's, how is Roshar or the world going to look by the end of this book? And it looks like Highspren just being around in the physical realm may be a reality, or something that is like normal or commonplace. Like that, the ability for Highspren to just be around is going to be totally different from how it has been thus far. It says, I know that to this day, people are confused about how at the end, Spren began arriving in the East without the need for bonds. Notam, now among the most famous of honor spren, is an example. The answer is simple, however. As the lands began to think of them and remember them, they needed less the bond of a single person to give them purchase in the physical realm, for the thoughts of an entire people bolstered them. So it's implied that it's just because people are thinking about these spren more, not necessarily a cataclysmic event. But if this person is right, that we are talking about, some child perhaps in Shinovar, is writing this book and is including this information, then Notam has been hanging out here for a while. Notam, along with other Highspren, not bonded to Radiance, but just hanging out, I guess, because people think of them more, so getting to the physical realm is easier. But I still think that's interesting. I think we're getting this glimpse into the future world, the back half Stormlight. I think it's not going to be we're just seeing low spren, like flame spren and glory spren and things like that, but high spren coming in and out of the physical realm freely.
I'm really excited that's where you went, Paul, because that's exactly what I wanted to dig into too, for all the reasons you're saying and digging into. And I feel like the implications here are big, or what this is referencing is kind of unclear to me. Why is Notam the most famous of honor spren? Like, yeah, he's interacted with our protagonists, but has he done anything super notable? Not really.
Should I Notam down for you?
Yeah, he hasn't done much that's super notable yet. but got me wondering, what is it going to be?
What is Notam going to do? What is going to happen? So you touched on this, Paul, but I think it begs even bigger questions. The honor spren can show up in the physical realm without needing bonds because, what does it say exactly? The thoughts of an entire people bolstered them. Why? What is going to happen that makes every single person out there think of spren?
No. This has already happened. The Knights Radiant have returned. Everybody's thinking about spren. And so now they've got a highway back to the physical realm.
Oh, I think this is referencing more.
No. This has already happened. And that I know to this day, people are confused by how at the end, mm-hmm. we're here. At the end, Spren began arriving in the East without needs for bonds. That it's something that's already happening.
Once.
No. Yeah. All the wind sprint that went back at the end or the beginning of this book, End of Rhythm of War, after we chose the whole.
But they're not in Shinobar. The physical realm.
There's like 12 wind sprint that blazed the path right at the beginning of this book, and they went to the physical realm without a specific bond in mind, just to go find a bond.
But isn't that someplace else? It's possible that this person is hearing of this story, but I'm kind of with Elliot. I don't think this has happened yet.
This person,
the way that it's describing it.
Talking this about person is East. In Shinobar, talking about the East, so literally the whole planet.
Okay. I had my East and West mixed up.
Got it. Okay, so I keep thinking this is a she. I don't know why, but this person is in Shinobar. The East is literally anywhere but Shinobar, and there's High Spren showing up. Like this is already happening as the 10 days are going on.
I've been thinking that this is in the West, where Shinobar is, that these Spren are popping up in Shinobar. And I was like, well, I feel like we're not really seeing that. This got to be something different that's happening in the future. And it is ominous with it talks about at the end. Like, okay, is this person writing from this after the end? Is the end still a name for a date? This one's not capitalized.
Yes. No. Well, it's the same thing as the end of all things. That this is probably written, and whoever has they published a book on their bingo board, their stonks have gone down. That this is written quite a bit in the future from Wind and Truth, I think.
I do agree with that. I would not have said so before these interludes. Sorry, before these epigraphs.
I agree.
I'll just say, and maybe we have to move on after this because we're spending maybe a lot of time here with some really big things to talk about later in this episode, but I'm not convinced. I'm not convinced. I think this could imply a future event we have not seen yet that is going to change how Spren interact with the world.
Sure.
Okay. One other log to throw in the fire, then we can move forward
You kept chapter. Your prediction vague enough, Elliot.
I did.
It could likely come true, so you look smart. I can honor that.
You did notice that.
The first epigraph, the one right before this, says the wind. Okay, hold on. I think I already messed up my whole thing. It says the wind was not there for the contest of champions, the final confrontation between Odium and the mortals who would oppose him. She felt ostracized from that world where it was storms and not wind who drew attention. I realized as soon as I read that we're talking about the wind. I thought this was once again from the perspective of the author. And it was that I was not there, and I thought this author was talking about themselves in the third person, and I was like, that's where you got your she, Trevor. It says, she felt ostracized from that world. There were storms, not wind, who drew attention. But then I read it, and I'm like, okay, never mind, scratch that. He's talking about the wind, so.
So after the last thing on these epigraphs, as I read the identity reveal one, that my parents sold on the wagon. I went back to the wagon chapter and I read it. And I was like, there's got to be some sort of key detail about some kid who is in the background of this scene. Nothing. There's the parents are not named. They say like two brief lines to Zeth and Kaladin and they go off. There is no detail about this family given. Okay. On to bigger and less important things. Where do we want to start? Shallan, Adolin, or Kaladin?
Probably the Adolin stuff, I think. That might be the most straightforward. Yes. Okay.
Well, let's do it. So isn't this where Adolin walks in and begins to fight with Abaddai the Monarch. And Abaddai gives him his... This actually made me pause, because every time one of our characters is about to die to specifically like a fused or something, the fused has to give their little triumph speech.
Right.
Which gives the...
You got me monologuing.
Yeah, he's actually gives our protagonist a moment to find an answer. And here we have that. He tells Adolin a little bit about how foolish he is or something like that. And then swings his shard blade to kill him. Foolish is how you should have known in an aluminum room you have to summon your blade before you walk in. And the Azish have really built themselves a fancy trap instead of protection. So he monologues, then he swings to kill Adolin. Adolin turns around, stops him with an aluminum candlestick. So we get the aluminum coming out.
True.
To save the day. And that's where we leave it, right?
Yeah.
Like cliffhanger. We'll come back to that, see if Adolin is okay and wins this duel with a candlestick. Or not.
It'll be a Beauty and the Beast twist, and the candlestick will start talking.
Singing.
Oh, no. Ooh, no. Genuine question. Do aluminum things not have spread?
That is a question.
That is a really good question.
I bet the answer is no.
I also think it's no, because I think that's like the defining property, right?
But, right.
Because aren't Spren investiture in some capacity?
Correct.
And they are expressly...
I bet aluminum things don't have Spren.
Hmm. Well, that's a fascinating question.
Or the corresponding bead on Shadesmar, I should say.
But what if you start thinking about aluminum
Spren? Right. No, seriously, as I think about this, not having a Spren seems to violate some rules. Would the Spren behave differently?
But all the rules have to do with the investiture on Roshar, and it's anti your investiture on Roshar. That's the whole point.
Right. But everything has a cognitive entity in the cognitive realm.
You're right. So it does have a bead? And you can talk to it?
It can have a bead and not a Spren, right?
But could you convince it to turn into fire?
I think it'd be way too hard for any of our characters to do, but maybe. I think you...
Can you soul cast aluminum?
Almost certainly not. You almost certainly could not surge bind aluminum.
I think it's probably something that, like, let's say, like, Adonalsium could do it, you know, but, like, our characters can't, you know?
Hmm.
Somebody out there help us with this one. This is a fascinating question that I'm sure somebody's wrestled with already out there. Somebody point us to a Reddit chat that probably already exists on how
aluminum
behaves in the cognitive realm. Can you soul cast it? We kind of know its properties a bit. It can block a shard blade. It hides you from being able to sense surge binding, all those things. But get into the physics of it. Does aluminum not have a Spren? Can you soul cast it? Oh, this is breaking my brain a bit.
The properties outside of the physical realm. So what I'm not sure about. Like, I know it does those things, obviously, in other books. It has its uses, and it's expressly anti-investiture or investiture blocking or like consuming even. So yeah, my guess is it does have a bead in Shadesmar. We talked about that. Like, it is a cognitive thing, right? But I don't think it has a Spren.
Second question. Does its Spren disappear after the room is lined in aluminum?
Stop. There's smoke rising from my ears.
So the room has a Spren. We've seen the castle of Kolinar has a Spren in the Yasna prologue. So the throne room, the Azus throne room's got a Spren. or a bead or whatever you want to call it. You line it with aluminum. What happens to it?
I think it's just a room that I think it still has its thing. This is a tough one.
But could you not talk to it anymore? I don't know.
I mean, the room has aluminum in it. So if that by that logic, even though it's lined and has a lot of aluminum, you'd be saying any room that has aluminum in it could no longer be a thing, right?
Well, it's not 100% shielding aluminum. The room in aluminum, and then you can't have access to the room. Like, anyway, we can move on. Adolin,
we also Adolin what's funny is that we also get the announcement of the Odium's champion, but here we are with our aluminum.
No,
room.
No.
Yeah, hold on.
Adolin swings back with an aluminum candle, and he has the epic line. Abaddai taunts him with, "I thought you were the best swordsman in all the planet," and he says, "No, but I was trained by him." I love that line.
Our Zyle shout out.
Zyle shout out, which I'm not sure is actually 100% accurate because we've just seen Talm like absolutely wreck house.
Oh, yeah.
And that was in this conversation. So I don't know if Zyle actually has that crown right now.
I was wondering the same thing. So, but very cool.
I didn't take too much away from the Adolin versus Abaddai scene yet, other than it was rather drawn out. Maybe you were talking about this a second ago with the monologuing. Abaddai is not in a hurry to end this.
I actually felt better about that because it explains why. It explains why he's monologuing. He's stalling. That's the point. He doesn't actually want to kill Adolin. He wants to negotiate with Adolin to find the Emperor.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't, as with a lot of these, I don't know where this is going, and I need to know where this is going to decide how I feel about it here in the moment. Is one-legged Adolin going to be able to stand up to a fused with a shard blade in full shard plate, or is Adolin just going to die?
For whatever reason, I feel safer about Adolin. I feel more confident in Adolin now than I did at the end of day 9. He made the resolution that he has to see his dad. Therefore, he has plot armor now.
I agree with you, Trevor. I feel that Adolin is safer than Zeth in this moment.
I would agree.
And yeah, I feel like the candlestick thing was like he's going to be fine. He's got a tool he can use, and it seems unlikely, but he'll at least hold on and live, I think. I don't necessarily know if he's going to win the fight with this candlestick, but he's at least going to live some way. So
he's gonna talk to the candlestick and say, "But you could be a sword," and then he pulls out a sword.
I think you're right about that.
So maybe all of our questions about aluminum are just going to get answered as soon as we turn the page.
That might be true, yeah. All right. Shallan, Renarin, Relaine are finally here. I feel like we're going to say finally here 7 times in this episode. We have arrived at the Ba'Edomishram prison, which is actually Bondsmith Malishi's childhood bedroom. It seems kind of random. And she lets Renarin and Relaine in, turns around, shuts the door, and has a 1v1, or is it a 1v2, with Moraes.
Real quick on the Mishram prison being Malishi's childhood room. I think that was supposed to be a predictable thing, in that all of our characters, or at least a bunch of them, when they appeared in the spiritual realm or they were going through stuff in the spiritual realm, found themselves kind of reverting back to their childhoods or their past. And I guess it was really big with Renarin, but the other ones did it too. where they end up in kind of that place they feel safe, which is their childhood room. And I think this is supposed to be like, oh yeah, obviously that's where Malishi ended up in, and he just kind of got stuck there, couldn't get out. So he died of old age sitting next to the gem holding by Domishram.
What a way to go.
Yeah, honestly. Okay. Can we do like a 30-second recap?
On who Malishi is?
Yes, on who Malishi is.
Sure. So I always remember who Malishi is because I did a pre-chapter read with Ranks and Tim. Ranks let me know exactly who Malishi was in those episodes. Malishi is the last bondsmith of the old Knights Radiant who used to be bonded to the sibling. So at the time of betraying Ba and Amishram, Honor has a midlife crisis and goes and off the wire, off the rails. Malishi is the bondsmith at the time. And he is in on the betray Ba and Amishram, traps her in the gemstone, takes her to the spiritual realm. And what we have just learned now is Malishi goes to the spiritual realm and stays there, ensuring that Ba and Amishram stays entrapped and ends up dying there. So that's the last the sibling knew before Navani. Is that, remember back in the beginning of Rhythm of War, of the sibling talking to Navani of, humans are terrible, why would you trap this spren in this fabrial? You need to let the spren out, blah, blah, blah. That's all PTSD from Ba and Amishram getting trapped in this gemstone by her previous bondsmith.
Okay.
Caught up?
I really appreciate that. That's extremely helpful, actually. Because they mentioned Malishi being a bondsmith, and I'm like, hold on, I feel like I should know this, or I should remember this, but I did not. So, okay. Cool. Okay, yeah, and quite ominous, they come up to this dead bondsmith, Malishi, dead in the spiritual realm. And hopefully that doesn't happen to them.
Well, and the chapter ends on a pretty ominous note. I think the very last thing we see of Renarin and Merlaine is something, a line along the lines of, and then Renarin and Merlaine were left with a choice.
They had a decision to make. Yes. So what's the decision? More predictions. Are they going to let her out, or are they going to step on her?
I think they are going to let her out. I feel like we've been leading up to this whole time about Ba and Amishram being in prison. I think they're going to let her out. I don't know whether that will be good or bad. It certainly will be a game changer. I don't know which way. It will change the game, though, that's for sure.
All right, let me push, because I think we'll all jump to the conclusion that they'll let her out. The real prediction is, what exactly does that do?
Well, let's go there for a second. Trevor, you said something interesting earlier in this episode, I think, of maybe it was last episode. You think maybe at the end of this book, Odium is not the Odium that we know now.
Yes.
What if that could be caused by the release of Mishram?
And she pops out and stabs Taravancian in the back, worm tongue style.
And yes, and takes up the shard of Odium like she intended to from the beginning, but yet somehow the influence on her by Renarin and Merlaine heals her somehow, or creates a positive direction for that to move in of that dream we had originally, the original plan that Tanavas betrayed. Oh, that could kind of heal Honor too.
It would do such weird things to Honor Spren though, because Ba and Amishram has like huge power over like all Spren on Roshar.
Yeah.
And then like if she were to hold the shard of Odium, oh, that would
I'll see, but that kind of ties into what I was trying to get with the epigraph as well, of some kind of event that allows Spren to be viewed differently. Oh, man.
Okay. Wouldn't make sense why everyone's thinking about him now.
Yeah.
I was also going to say, if you tack that, this little theory onto the theory we talked about last episode, Elliot, of Dalinar losing the contest, being bonded or under the service of Odium, but still having an outlet or avenue for good within that, could look different if we get a new Odium as well. So, or the contest of champions could look different if all the sudden, like, you know, this is all happening very fast. It is possible that before the contest is decided, that, which would be quite anticlimactic, by the way, contest of champions isn't decided yet, Bayard Omishram pops out, stabs Taravangian, takes up the shard of Odium, and then is like, oh, actually, I'm going to put in this champion, and then, like, Dalinar wins or something. That'd be ridiculous and not going to happen, but you know what I mean. There's a lot of variables.
Well, we'll talk about the champion here in a second, but
that's true.
If Bot and Amishram were to pick up Odium, that gives a whole new definition to the term passion spren. Let me just put it that way. Because passion spren are like a actual type of spren, but if you had Odium, which is passion, or at least that's how it likes to look at itself, as a spren, then, anyway. Okay, let's go to Shinnabar. Oh wait,
well,
Shallan needs to stab Formless in the face first.
Yeah, that.
So, Shallan, it's written as, thanks for the cliffhanger, Tim, which I'll get to I'll get to the chapter split from Tim here in a second. It's written as Shallan makes the deduction that Yatil has followed Shallan this whole time as Formless, and so she turns with the anti-Stormlight dagger and stabs Formless in the face. And that's the cliffhanger that we're left on at the end of 131 with Shallan. We're at the beginning of 131. Here's the problem. If Yatil is not hiding as Formless, would this not do quite a bit of damage to Shallan herself? Isn't she attacking herself with an anti-Stormlight dagger?
Yeah, a lot of questions coming up here. It's Shallan. Shallan's weird, right? Shallan breaks all the rules. We've said that every single book. So if she did stab a persona of hers in the spiritual realm with an anti-light dagger, does that have negative impacts on her? Or would it like just kill off that entity and just remove Formless from the equation, leaving Shallan unscathed?
It's a good question. You were correct that we had this final confrontation with Formless. We had some Shallan conclusion moment, what, at the end of day 8, I think? And you're like, no. Oh, with Chinarach.
You're like, no.
We still have one more big thing. We have to go fight Formless. You're correct. But yes, it might be Yatil all along.
That
might make me feel better about Formless coming back.
Yeah. What if it was Yatil all along?
Right. So at the beginning of this book, we're like, why the heck is Formless back? We handled Formless. That, okay. If Formless is actually Yatil, that actually makes me feel a lot better. Because Shallan's asking why the heck is Formless back. And if we have successfully dealt with Formless and it's just Yatil hanging out, okay, if that is the case, next chapter, thanks, Tim, then I feel a lot better.
Yeah, I feel very confident that in this scene right here, Formless is Yatil.
Okay.
I'm less confident that it's been a Yatil the whole time. I don't know. I think I'm with you in that I would like that turn of events. It would make a lot of sense. But I think Yato is about to take a dagger to the face.
Rest in peace. Any input on Shallan, Paul, before we move on?
Yeah, the only thing I really have to say is I'm glad we've jumped back to this Yatil thing. I kind of forgot Yatil was a character. Not actually, but like the relevance hasn't seemed relevant in a long time. And so I was really kind of excited whenever she's like, where's Yatil? And then turns around and stabs Formless, who, you know, I anticipate is Yatil here. Yeah, that was about it. But yeah, more people hiding in the spiritual realm, hiding in plain sight.
I wonder if the death of Yatil actually tries to, if we actually salvage Moraes' character or not. Because Moraes and Shallan kind of had the we're enemies, but I wish we weren't scene just before this, right? And I wonder if the death of Yatil has come to the survivor moment for Moraes.
That could absolutely be where this scene goes immediately following this. Let's say right. Yatil's gone, out of the equation, dead on the floor. Shallan could turn to Moraes and say, now's your moment.
Right.
Now's your chance to travel the stars like you dreamed and come be a good guy. And then Moraes will have to make that choice. Am I a bad guy? Am I a ghost blood? Is this me? Am I going to keep following orders or do I break ranks?
Does he go off into Mistborn Era 3?
Could be.
Okay. Off to Shinovar. Zeth gets dogpiled on by six fused, soon-to-be new heralds.
Yes.
I enjoyed saying that sentence. Anybody? Anyone have any more input?
So, the title of Chapter 130... Isn't it like the, what is it called? The pleasure of bleeding or the something like that?
Actually, 131 is the worth of a life. 130 is the pleasure of pain or something like that.
It's bleeding. I know bleeding is in there.
All right, hold on.
I know that word is in there on 130. And yes, I know that 131 is not in it, but chapter 130.
The pleasure of bleeding, you are correct.
Okay. Actually, I was right, Trevor. The pleasure of bleeding, and it was a Zeth chapter. I stopped listening to this chapter halfway through on my first reread through, thinking this is going to be it. This is going to be the chapter that Zeth dies, the moment we feared, that we've all been dreading, if it could happen, because we acknowledge it'd be a good story point, but that it would be very sad. Because we had this theory, you know, the whole color splash thing in Shin culture, Zeth kind of getting to come into his own and redeem himself, and that he might die. His whole color splash is red, and so he'd earn his color as he loses his life. And this chapter is called
"That Was My Prediction."
Yes, yes. And we enter this chapter, and it's called The Pleasure of Bleeding, and we are seeing Zeth fight, like, six honor bearers or something, or these people. And I'm like, oh, this is it. This is the day I've feared since that prediction became a thing. And he's not dead yet. So there we go. If he didn't die then that's a good hump to get past. Because I feel like that was quite poetic. Look, he dies right there.
I'm with you 100%. I cannot get over the lack of definition of dead in these scenes. What if Zeth dies? They just bring him back as a fused and he's fine. Like, everybody in this scene except for Kaladin is dead. Every single one of them.
I understand what you mean, but you know what I mean as well. Yeah, like,
absolutely, you know. I do.
Zeth dying here and not getting stitched back to life. And
sure.
You know,
I 100% I am on board with you. the way the story has panned out, the term death has just lost so much meaning to me in this Shinovar storyline specifically. Like, it really does mean nothing to me since we've killed all of these heralds before, all of these heralds to be before, and they are back. I'm struggling with this.
Yeah, that's true. And I anticipate that we're going to see this as being quite, I don't know. Yeah, it is all a bit jank, a bit Frankenstein. We got a lot of Frankensteins in this room, you know?
Including Zeth.
Yeah, exactly. Speaking of, I felt that way harder than I have in this book. Whenever they announce the champion as Elokar, by the way, before it's like, kidding. Yeah. They're like, an Elokar stepped out. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Elokar stepped out. Like, he's been like super dead for a super long time. Like,
right.
There's no Elokar walks out. It'd be the same as like, about the same as like Gavilar walking out, you know?
I was going to say that I'd be less surprised at Gavilar than I would agree. At Elokar. When it said Elokar, I was like, I don't believe you. I genuinely don't believe you.
I was waiting for that explanation. Like, okay, tell me how that works.
I want to talk about this more when we go all in on that scene right there, actually. But I think Sanderson, maybe he did this intentionally, but I think he seriously weakened his punch by doing that.
Yeah.
By doing the Elokar bluff first.
Yeah,
we'll get there. We'll get there.
Okay.
Back in the Zeth scene, though, I want to try and talk through what's going on here and see if you guys are tracking the same way, because this actually gets kind of convoluted kind of fast. We head into the challenge. Nail has kind of told us what to expect a little bit. Zeth gets dogpiled by all the fused honor bearers, like you just said. But what are we trying to do? What are we trying to do here? Zeth and Kaladin talk about this. And I think what they think the plan is this. Step one, fight the honor bearers and try not to die. But also, like, caveat to that, Zeth is still on this, I don't really want to kill people anymore. So he's fighting the honor bearers, trying not to die, but also doesn't really want to kill anyone. That's step one. Step two is convince Ishar to release Shinovar, which would then complete Zeth's quest. So while Zeth is fighting all the honor bearers, trying to not die, Kaladin has the task of, while they're fighting, convince Ishar to release Shinovar somehow. The reason they need that is for step three, they need someone to speak an ideal. And they think the closest person to that is Zeth. They kind of go like down the list. They're like, Nail, can you? Oh, no, I've spoken with the last one, so I'm already there. Kaladin, nope. Speaking the fourth ideal pretty much broke me, so there's no way I can do the next one.
He said, I've got no idea what it is. I'll be honest. I haven't thought about it for 2 seconds.
Also that. So then, okay, Zeth's the only one left. And in order to speak yours, you have to complete your quest. And we need someone to speak an ideal because we've been told that in those moments where an ideal is spoken, the heralds become lucid for a moment. So step four is get Ishar back to his normal self so that you can have a quick therapy session with that version of Ishar to fix him, heal him, get him back on our side to ultimately somehow win the day. Did I get all that?
Yeah.
That is a lot to accomplish in one showdown.
Yep.
And if you think about it, Kaladin has to have two therapy sessions. He first has to convince crazy Ishar to release Shinovar somehow. Then when he gets to actually talk to real Ishar, he has to then therapize that version of Ishar. I don't know how in the world he's doing this. And the method he chooses is, yet again, not great. Callahan has made great strides with Zeth. He's made some pretty good strides with Nail, but his first steps on with either one of those were pretty clumsy, and he starts there again with Ishar, where he is like, okay, Wander Sail.
When in doubt, Wander Sail it out.
Which...
Been Trevor's terrible. Motto since he's first read The Way of Kings.
Since chapter 51 of The Way of Kings, exactly.
But Ishar shuts him down pretty fast. He goes, oh yeah, I wrote that.
I was devastated to hear that, by the way. I was so distraught when Ishar said, I authored that. I'm like, ah, dang it.
So then Kaladin goes, oh shoot. Well, Fleet. Oh yeah, I knew that dude. He was actually terrible.
What didn't even make it.
Side note, what are the other
whatever?
What are the other three or four like tales that he comes up with that Kaladin's going to say next? Isn't like Vasher in one of them or something?
Maybe.
Let me go find it. Keep Maybe. Talking.
I remember that. I did think of you, Trevor, whenever I heard that Ishar was the author of The Wander Sail. I was like, he's going to be devastated.
I took it hard, I'll be honest.
Well, and I think my takeaway from all this was, I don't know how Kaladin is going to make any kind of progress here, because Kaladin has done a great job of getting through to both Zeth and Nail. But the whole point of that was it took time. It wasn't just a story he told and it changed their lives. No, it took time for him to build that relationship, to kind of build up that connection with them, like little C connection or big C too, I don't know. To be like, hey man, trust me. It takes weeks to build up that, to get to someone where you can have that real conversation. He's got to condense all that down into 30 minutes with Ishar twice. I don't see this making any kind of progress at all.
Yeah, I agree. The as I mentioned with my conundrum word, the whole strategy at hand is saying an ideal breaks the facade a bit, but it brings Ishar back to reality for a second where you can reason. So I think for it to happen so quick, it has to be in a bit of a Nail moment where there's like an epiphany moment or like a scales falling off the eyes, like Ishar being like, wow, I've been seeing so wrong for so long type of thing. And like, you know, a quick change that he realizes he's been misunderstanding or something like that. And that's currently our plan for that is with an ideal being spoken. Do we think that Kaladin is going to end up saying an ideal here? We know it's been on the tip of his tongue for a while. We might just get that Kaladin fifth ideal.
But the fifth? No, he hasn't been thinking about the fifth. He says that. The fourth is the one he was struggling with for a long time, and he said that at the end of Rhythm of War.
But hasn't Sel been joking about, like, you totally know the words?
No, that was for the fourth. Because he sure did. He knew the words, he just didn't believe them. I accept that there are those that I cannot protect. He refused to say that.
Yeah, but like, a couple chapters ago, like, when there was the chapter with him and Nail, like, when he plays the flute and Nail as his breakdown, isn't it in that chapter Sil makes a joke about the words to the fifth ideal?
If she did, I missed it.
Maybe I'm making this up, but I don't think I am. I we can go. Maybe I need to go look back at that, but I feel like that it's been hinted at or joked at. So
you might be right. I don't
I think I remember. It's not that Kaladin knows the words, but that Sil knows them, which is, I don't know what that does for us, but
if
I'm pretty confident that
if that's true, which it absolutely could be, I think the sticking point that pops up in this chapter is Kaladin seems to make it clear that he has no intention of saying the fifth ideal, that he doesn't even want to. He's kind of arrived at, man, fourth ideal was really hard. I don't want to go further.
Just to
all cover the reason to go further.
I mean, maybe.
Just to clear up my 2 cents from earlier, Vasher is not mentioned in these other stories that Ishar brings up. It's Gasha and the Ten Assassins, the story of the Wandering Island, and Tepra the Dragon Child. Vasher is not mentioned. So my apologies.
I forgive you.
Is Zeth going to die?
Well, I mean, you said it. He's already dead.
Yeah, but within the basic definition of dead, is Zeth going to die?
So now we care about the base definition. Okay. I'll play your little game.
Back to Paul's definition of dead.
I'll play your little game, Trevor, if that's what you want to talk about. I'm taking a big half of copium and saying, no, Zeth is not going to die. I think he has the plot armor to live another day, to see his challenge through, become the Knight of Truth. And so I don't think he's going to die yet.
We're here, Paul. There is no more days. So you're saying he lives to the back half, presumably.
Yes. Please.
I will
get on my hands and knees and beg. Brandon, please. No, I'm kidding. I don't know. I really couldn't tell you. I'm going to stick with yes against my better judgment.
That's a hard prediction.
It is.
I don't think Zeth dies right here, right now in the scene. Like when we flip to the next Zeth point of view, he does not die there.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and I'm well aware last time I did this, I made an absolute fool of myself when I insisted that Shallan's wedding would not be on scene, and literally the next page it was. But I'm pretty confident that in the very next scene, we will not witness Zeth die, because if we did, that would mean his father kills him. Like, surely.
Right.
That is true.
He's dueling with his father right now, and that does not feel like a satisfying conclusion to the Zeth arc.
But what if he saves his father and his sister doing it?
I don't know. You're stretching. One other thing I was going to add. Elliot, I agree. I don't think he's going to die here. Like, next time we see him, I don't know. There still has to be a little bit of wrap up here.
I think he could go on to die in the ensuing scenes. I think this may not be the very last bit of action we see with Kaladin and Zeth, and he could end up dying before the end of this book. Very likely, in my mind still. Will he die in this exact moment, in this brawl with the fused honor bearers? No, I'm pretty confident in that.
I think if Adolin survived the last scene that he survived on, that we all thought he was going to die on, I think Zeth still, if Adolin still has to talk to his dad, I think Zeth has got to talk to his dad or someone or something or complete his quest.
That's the whole point. So, okay. If
it all happens at once, yes, I think it can happen. But if it's still like they're just fighting and hopping around, I don't think it's going to be like a casual he dies. But if so, then that's all coming to a close really quick for Zeth, and the payoff and everything is happening right then and there. I'm expecting like a Zeth final chapter of the book, like death, if it happens. Last two chapters, maybe 2 or 3.
It's the classic Sanderson twist at the end. For 5 full books, Zeth has wanted to be dead. And now he finally has something to live for himself. Oh, Kaladin has finally talked him into it, and now he's going to die.
Spain.
It could happen.
It might not matter whether he lives or dies, right? Depending on this whole contest thing, too.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, the definition of death just has no meaning in this Shinovar thing. I can't get over that. Elliot, you said we have 6 showdowns happening. Can you head count them for me?
Well, I haven't even fully talked about the biggest one yet, but
we'll get there in a second.
Yeah. So by the time I got to the end of chapter 131 and kind of got to our stopping point for this episode, I think we've said thanks, Tim, enough times in this episode, maybe mockingly, but thanks, Tim. You've left us literally in the middle, right at kind of, I think, the climax of not one, not two, no less than 6 different showdowns. And here's what I think they are. You've got Kaladin versus Ishar. Right next to that, you have Zeth and the Honor Bearer, specifically like Naturo.
Right.
Those are kind of separate, I think, because they're kind of ignoring each other and going at it with their opponent. We have, of course, Adolin versus Abaddai. We have Shallan versus Moraes. We're about to see, maybe this one's not quite at the climax moment yet, Renarin and Relaine versus Mishram. And then the big one, Dalinar versus, well, Gavinor, I guess. 6. 6 different showdowns all happening simultaneously.
Yeah. I guess I didn't split the Shinnevar one into 2 separate ones, but I would accept that after what you just said. Okay. The contest of champions. Here we go. Paul, offhandedly, in episode like 242, one of the first episodes of this book, said, yeah, but what if Gavinor gets sucked into the spiritual realm and then comes out an adult? And I'm not sure if I rolled my eyes. I think I didn't because I was being polite. I gave that absolutely 0 ground to stand on. I did not consider it for a second. And Paul was right.
How did you like to say you're sorry?
No. How do you feel, Paul?
Well, pretty bad since you didn't apologize, but
no, but you, anyways. I don't need to apologize because you were correct and you are vindicated.
Well, you're not going to apologize for doubting me at
right.
all.
I'm going to be bitter and you're going to be in triumph, and that's it's your victory. I concede.
I accept.
I don't apologize, okay. But I do concede.
I'll take it. Anyways, as the new resident Cosmere expert.
There you go.
On all things. Now, I mean, I also have to take not full credit for this. If you remember, while we were at Dragonsteel, someone, before we like knew anything, before anyone knew anything, someone who had finished all of the preview chapters made a prediction. They said Gavinor's going to be the champion. And here's why. And I was like, whoa, I had no idea that they got sucked into the spiritual realm. It was the one thing I was minorly spoiled on.
Sure.
In this book. We once we had the book in hand and we're reading forward, I knew like we were at this in like 2 weeks or something. But at the time he did that and I was like, that's kind of crazy. I kind of like it. And so there we are. And yeah, we were right. I for a while we've had this guess that Gavinor is going to be the champion because we've seen him kind of be tormented and turned against Dalinar and the whole joke of we're going to play swords and all these things. But my understanding is, Trevor, you were not buying into at all the grown-up Gavinor stepping out of the spiritual realm.
I was 100% bought into the Gavinor thing. Like, maybe not 100%. Like, 93% bought into Gavinor. And then maybe 5% on, like, Moash or something. I could never have guessed a time dilation plotline. Gavinor is 20. You said 20 in your prediction. You said Gavinor comes out and he's, like, 20. And he is 2 decades later. He is 25. They say 2 decades. You were 100% correct. Gavin Orr comes out as an adult. As I listened to it for the first time, like a week ago, I was like, you cannot be serious. Paul had to have been spoiled on this. That was my all. I was convinced that you had been spoiled on this. But I don't think the book was even out yet when you made that prediction.
When it was fed to me, it was not.
Right.
Like I said, it's not fully original. But yes, whoever that was really hit the jackpot. I ran with the ball. But that person needs to go buy a lottery ticket. If you're listening to this, go put some money down on something. I don't know. Anyways, yeah, it is crazy. I'm curious to know, what are your honest thoughts? Do you think this is cool? Do you not like this? Are you still have to wait and see what happens?
Elliot teased disappointment in the Elokar bait and switch. So let's talk about Elokar first, and then we'll talk about Grown Up Gavin Orr.
Okay.
But before you go, Elliot, I want to genuinely thank Tim for not leaving us on 1:30, which would have been really, really, really funny if he had.
Yeah, that would have. Yeah.
But it would have wasted 45 minutes of everybody's time, because we would have spent 45 minutes talking about Elokar.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And it's not Elokar. Now, with the caveat, as we're recording this episode, it made me think, what if this is a bait and switch? And he did leave us on the bait and switch, and it's not Gavin Orr. But no, I don't think that's going to be the case, but it might be. Okay. The bait and switch. Elliot, go. The Elokar into Gavin Orr thing was weird.
Well, weird, maybe. Disappointing a little bit. And this is going to sound really negative, and I don't actually mean it to be super that way. I think this whole Gavin Orr thing was well foreshadowed, very much something that has been led into properly. I think Brandon, this is a great Brandon payout moment. He has laid this in there. There were elements that pointed to this along the way. I think 3 or 4 episodes ago, I even threw out that I was 100% sure the champion was going to be Gavin Orr because of a few things that get said by Gavin Orr in the spiritual realm. This is a good story about what we're going to read. I think Brandon seriously weakened his blow here by almost like making a joke out of the champion is Elokar and leaving that as a cut between two chapter segments. That it made for a moment, a brief moment. It's not too many more pages before you get the actual reveal, but there's a few pages where you're going, what? There's no way that could be Elokar, or how could that be? And so then when the actual twist comes, that it's Gavin Orr, you're left with this kind of like, oh, okay, that makes more sense. Whereas instead of, if he just led with the Gavin Orr, I think that would have been way more impactful of a moment where you're like, oh my goodness, it's Gavin Orr. Whereas instead, the experience you have is, oh, okay, that's far less insane than Elokar.
That's
I don't know why he did that.
That's exactly the reaction I had.
So I don't know why he did that. I don't know why he did that, because I think he took what is still a powerful moment and he lessened it.
The only reason I can think of is because you weren't expecting it. That's why he did it.
Well,
and the everybody guessed successfully that it was Gavin Orr. So he had to throw something in there to make you feel like you were off balance.
And I really, really, really hope that's not why he did it. If that is, then he has very dangerously fallen into the TV show trap.
Right.
TV shows do that all the time. They throw a twist at you just because they've got to do something that you weren't expecting. And if Brandon has fallen into that trap, I will not like that at all. That's not a great writing tool. So I'm hoping there's a different reason he did this, but it doesn't really make sense to me. That said, now that I've completely trashed it and rained on it, we should go back to having Gavinor step out as the 20-something-year-old champion of Odium is actually super epic, and I am way invested in where this goes next. I am full in on this. Don't read this as, oh, Elliot's raining on the parade here. Like, no, I'm actually fully bought in. I just think its impact on me was a 90 when it could have been a 98.
I'll turn it back down to an 80. I'm a big fan of the Gavinor thing, as much as you can be. I am so confused on the time dilation thing, though. It is really odd to me to throw in more time dilation on top of the time dilation that we've already had in this book and to have an adult Gavinor. I can't get over how Paul was right. But secondly, I'm just wondering why. If there is a good reason for it, fine. If we have a good reason for it, besides I tormented him for 20 years, here you go. Like, yes, we already knew Taravangian was a terrible person. You could have just used 5-year-old Gavinor and you're a terrible person. Why? I don't understand. I was a little miffed and it has thrown me. But it's not a super big deal for me, but I was just confused.
Here's why I think we need an adult Gavinor here. Because I think Brandon wants an actual contest.
Okay. Like you can't void because he's 5.
If you have Dalinar needs to make a tough choice here. If it's Dalinar versus literal 5-year-old Gavinor, there's no choice there.
Right.
I don't think. Like that would be that would put the context of the champion of the context in such a stark light of, I don't think we're going to read a book where Dalinar slays his 5-year-old grandson.
Sure.
That just takes it to a dark place that doesn't fit in this world. Dalinar slaying a 25-year-old Gavinor, absolutely possible.
So I've been wrestling with, we've been under the assumption that Dalinar wouldn't make himself the champion, of course. And in a case like this, would refuse to fight. I'm wondering, he's been wrestling a lot with, you know, all the things. So Taravangian actually set an example of this, of his weakness being Carbranth and his family, and deleted them from the face of the earth. Do we think that there's a chance Dalinar does actually take this fight for the good of the world? You think zero chance,
Trevor? I hope there's a zero chance.
Okay. I think it's a zero chance. I don't think that would happen, but it made me think. I mean, there's...
Because of the epigraph, I hold the knife to the kid's throat. The whole world wants me to let it slip to save the world, blah, blah, blah. And for the specific line from 129, where he kisses his wife and his wife says, hey, go do what's right. Put everything else behind you. As soon as she said that, I was like, oh, yeah, it's Gavinor. She tells him, hey, I trust you. Go do what you think is right. There is no world where he fights Gavinor here. I hope I don't eat my words.
I think it would be pretty shocking if he kills Gavinor, because we just talked last episode about the continuing theme of there are some prices that you should not pay.
Sure.
Those were the words of Kaladin, but I think it very much resounds off of the discussion we've had with Jasnah and Taravangian, the theme of the book as a whole, right? Dalinar is all journey before destination, and Taravangian is all destination before journey. will you kill the innocent kid to save the world? That's a Taravangian thing to do.
An important detail here, just as a prediction, I guess. It specifically says we still have half an hour to the contest. I wonder if the temptation for Dalinar is not whether to fight Gavinor or not, but instead appoint an honors, appoint a champion that would kill Gavinor. I wonder if that's the temptation that Dalinar is about to fight with, because he does still have half an hour. And Taravangian has officially appointed his champion. He says so in chapter 131. This is my champion. Behold, blah, blah, blah. Dalinar has not officially appointed his champion yet. I am curious if his temptation is, I'm not going to kill Gavinor, but what if, you know?
Well, let's look at that through another lens, though. Temptation, maybe. But is there a big brain strategy here? Is there someone Dalinar could appoint that Gavinor would not fight?
Navani?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. No, I don't know who Gavinor wouldn't fight. This Gavinor.
Orodin. We are dealing with very corrupted and tortured Gavinor.
Yes.
I don't think Gavinor is going to... Gavinor is under... Keep in mind, Gavinor is under the impression that at this point he's the rightful king, and he will be ruling as king under Odium after winning this contest. I don't think there's anyone he's going to be like, no, I don't feel right fighting you.
Don't we?
He has a sense of determination here.
Don't we still have Lyft around?
I did. Lyft is the only person that came to my mind.
Oh, she's Gavinor's buddy.
Right?
She is Gavinor's buddy.
That's true. For the record, I think this is straightforward and Dalinar doesn't fight him and he loses. That is my prediction, for the record.
I agree.
But I did want to point out the distinction that we still have a couple minutes here where Dalinar could try to pivot or get out of it or something.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's how Dalinar thinks, so I don't think he'll do that.
Sure.
He's Dalinar is very much a man up, face the problem kind of guy. I don't think he's going to be like, oh, wait a second, I can pull a little switch here and trick him into win. That's not really how Dalinar thinks. So I'll be pretty surprised if that's the path it does go down.
I do think that Dalinar formally appoints himself, formally accepts the challenge, and then withdraws after the contest has begun. And so he loses. I don't think he tries to nullify it. I don't think he tries to set someone else up. I think he will lose the contest.
Could be.
Anything else?
No. And I think we're in another one of those cases of we need to hit the stop button on this recording so I can go read.
That's true.
This Tim, is probably the most excited in a while I've been to pick up the audiobook and read.
Just quick formatting for those listening. We read 2 weeks at a time. We've mentioned this before. We only have one more cliffhanger before the end of the book. So whatever Tim has left us on is what we're about to go read. And for next week, we have... For 268, we have chapters 132 through 136. Thanks for joining me, Paul Hilliard.
Let's go.
Toodles.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.